It's another edition of the Triple Threat Basketball Podcast. Kentavious Deshaun Dre Brown down here in SoCal, Solar Moedelli up in Northern California, and Chris Cozina in the Chicago area. And this is all about the biggest legend in Chicago sports history. That is Sammy Sosa. It's all about Michael Jordan and the Last Dance documentary that has really kind of taken over the sports world the last couple weeks. And when you look at Michael Jordan and you start breaking things down, this is a guy that we got to see as kids, and we were fortunate enough to see him. There's some people that are a few years younger than us, if not a decade younger, and they didn't get to see Jordan the way that we did. I would say Chris got to see him the most, in that he was in Chicago throughout, and a little bit older in that, you know, he saw the Jordan teams as they were forming to their championship level. I started watching them. My first memory, and that's where I'll start with both of you guys. My first memory is the 92 Dream Team. I had the poster up on my wall. I had the starting lineup action figures. And I remember, in terms of watching the Dream Team, watching them win the gold medal, and then my first memory of the Chicago Bulls is that 93 NBA Finals where it was Charles Barkley and the Phoenix Suns against the Chicago Bulls trying to go for the three-peat. So, Chris, I'll start with you. Your first memory of Michael Jordan and your first memory of the Bulls.
Yeah, it's kind of one and the same for me. My first memory is that Finals back in 1991 when Jordan switched hands in midair and Bulls beat Magic Johnson and the Lakers in five games. It was really the start of my fandom into basketball because this guy was just taking over the city and creating all this buzz. And then the finals start and we lose game one and then we sweep them the rest of the way. And it was Magic and James Worthy and Vlade Divac. And yeah, that was my first Jordan memory, 1991 NBA Finals.
And what about you, Saul?
Oh, man. And I feel young now. It's kind of nice. I was two for those finals, so I don't remember those. I definitely remember watching the 97 and 98s, though, against the Jazz. And I think that was really my earliest memory of really paying close attention to the teams. I was just too young for that first three-peat, so I kind of missed out all of that.
Yeah, 92, 93 were kind of my first memories in many sports, if I start to put it in that I was young. I wasn't even in kindergarten yet, but I remember watching just that 92 Dream Team was cool because it was an Olympic thing, so it wasn't just team sports. It was all the best players, the first time ever that they would go and play against the world's best, and up until then it was amateurs, and so you just got to see these guys really dominate. And as they've mentioned in the documentaries, kind of put this team on the map. But in terms of Michael Jordan, I want to go back to the beginning of his career and discuss it in relationship with this documentary, The Last Dance. It's been great so far. I know Chris was texting us last night. He says it maybe is the best documentary he's ever seen. We'll have to see how it ends up through 10 episodes, but I have a feeling you're not going to disagree with that six episodes later. But my first inclination on Jordan was the fact that, you know, he was a kid. We all know the story. He got cut from his varsity team. He didn't make the team. And then 2 years later, he's one of the best recruits in the country, goes to Carolina, makes the game-winning shot to beat the Georgetown Hoyas. But it is that dynamic of just where he was looked at heading into his career, because when he went to this Bulls team, Solar, this was not a team, as they mentioned in the documentary, that had a lot of success. This is not a team that had really any hope. And then Michael Jordan gets there, and there is this pressure on him instantly to be the star, which I didn't realize was the case. I thought, you know, he got there, he was a top three pick, but he was going to be looked at as a potential superstar. I didn't realize right from the start, pretty much everybody in Chicago looked at him as a savior and any hope that this team would have for a future championship.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the Bulls hadn't done anything, weren't good. I didn't realize, like, how horrible of a train wreck they were. Like, after watching the documentary and learning about, you know, like the traveling cocaine circus or whatever they called them, and like, I was like, I had no idea it was like that bad. Like, I knew Jordan came to a bad team and immediately like took over and was a star or whatever, but yeah, I didn't realize like the dire straits that the organization was in before that. I mean, it actually sounded hilarious when I was watching that first episode.
And Chris, in terms of these first four episodes, what is your favorite take from all four of these episodes so far?
You know, I was kind of texting you guys this last night. It's just all of the different things that I didn't get to really pick up on when I was younger, or the different vibes that the team had when I was younger. You know, when the Bulls first started their run, I was in first grade, and when they won their last championship, I was in eighth grade going into high school. So that's like a long gap. The thing that sticks out to me the most through these first four episodes is just the amount of competitive hate that Jordan still hangs on to. And it shouldn't really be a surprise, because you saw it. We saw it at his Hall of Fame speech, and you see it every time the guy talks. But it's just like, now we're going on 30 years later, and he just still hangs on to it so deeply. Like, he's still playing.
Now, why do you think, though, that this hasn't translated to him as a team president when he was with the Wizards, or an owner now that he's with the, you know, was the Bobcats, now the Hornets? Because this is a guy that his drive, his competitiveness, his willing to win over everything seemed to be what sets him apart. Is it just that the fact that his competition sort of lagged off as a player, and that's where it ended? Because I look at him as an owner, and, you know, he's looked at, let's be real, as not a great manager, draft pick guy, owner that's made good decisions. It's not like he's brought in a lot of free agents and taken his team to the next level. They've been pretty much an average to below average team. Why do you think that is? Because just seeing him during this documentary, Salar, I have a feeling that he would probably have the same competitiveness as an owner and as an executive.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this since you sort of mentioned it, trying to sort of come up with what I think about it. And, like, obviously, like Chris said, he hasn't lost any of the drive or anything like that. You know, he's sitting there and still, like, mad at Pippen for not being able to see straight in 1989. So, like, you know, it's like, so clearly he's, like, still competitive. The only thing I can come up with is that he, like, what made him, he can't do in a position other than being on the court. Like, maybe he could do it as a coach. Maybe. I don't know if he'd be a very good coach, but he'd be a scary coach, that's for sure. But I feel like just the things that he was able to do on a court or just as a part of a team, you can't really do from this new position that he has. And I think that's sort of what affects it's a different skill set. So even though he has the same mentality, he can't, like, sort of implement it the same way anymore.
Yeah, let me pick up on that a little bit, because I completely agree with you. I think it's variables that are outside of his control. You know, when he's on the basketball court and he has the ball in his hand, he ultimately controls the outcome. Like, he can score or he can miss. Now, when he's being the manager or the owner and he's picking these teams and these players, and he can't control how this 18-year-old kid that he picks is going to produce when he's older. He can't control where the ping pong balls land. There's just so many variables that are outside of his control. I'm sure that every time he has a losing season, he fucking hates it. You know, I'm sure he just sits in agony and misery until the next season starts over it. But they're variables that are outside of his control.
Let's go to the
one. Just real quick on that. Also, like, something you can kind of see while he was playing, like, obviously he understood his teammates, and, you know, he clearly, like, understood Rodman, understood Pippen, like, was able to work with them. But, like, he didn't always, you know exactly what was going to be best. Like, he was super pissed when they got rid of Charles Oakley, and, right, like, clearly things worked out okay after that. So it's like, it's not like he's had that innate skill to be like, oh, this talent, we need him, we need that. Like, it's just different, and I think it's something that, like, is clearly a skill.
Let's bring up Scottie Pippen, because this is a guy that, by all accounts, one of the best teammates ever in terms of the sidekick, was able to realize very quickly early on, I'm never going to be Michael Jordan, but I'm going to be the best complement to Jordan that anybody's really ever had with a supporting cast. And if you look at his career, a lot of what they discussed in the first couple episodes was he took that early contract in 1991. It was locked in for 7 years, never renegotiated, which didn't really make a lot of sense because I have a feeling that he could have, or somebody with the Bulls could have renegotiated it. But nonetheless, the one thing that did is that did allow the Bulls to go out and get Dennis Rodman, that allowed them to re-sign some other role players and give Michael Jordan the money that put him over the top of every pro athlete at that time. But when you look at Scottie Pippen and you go back to his career, and I'm going to start with you, Chris, is Scottie Pippen a top 20 player ever, top 10 player? Where do you put him in relation with all the greats? Because it's evident he's really one of the rare examples of a guy that in his peak was never the star for his own team.
Yeah, I think he would, in my book, at least be top 25, maybe top 20. They kind of touched on it a little bit in the first two episodes of the documentary. The years that Jordan was gone, he took the Bulls to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Knicks. And if it wasn't for Hugh Hollins, I mean, I remember this vividly. The Bulls should have gone to the finals that year, too. But they got screwed mercilessly by the refs. And that year, Scottie Pippen finished the year as the runner-up for MVP. So, you know, you're talking about when Jordan wasn't there, he was still, you know, a top 2 to 3 player in the league at that time. And then just his defensive prowess and his capabilities. There's no way I can put him in top 10. I mean, I heard there was a quote the other day that said he's the best number 2 player of all time, like the best wingman. I still think that honor probably goes to Kobe. I think Kobe's the best number 2 of all time because those early Lakers dynasties, there's no argument Shaq was the 1 on that team. Kobe was the 2. But I do think that Scottie's definitely top 20, maybe top 25.
And what do you think, Solar? And also, I would throw in, he mentioned Kobe, Shaq. I think that's a good one. But another one that I think is worth mentioning is when Magic Johnson became the guy for the Lakers, there was a guy named Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Very true.
A pretty good number 2 as well. But very what do you think, Solar? In terms of Scottie Pippen, just give me your breakdown of Scottie Pippen as the player, how he translates, and sort of who he compares to nowadays or where he fits in all time in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Chris, too. And I kind of think what you said about him being like the best, second best player ever type of thing, like that makes sense. And like those other duos you mentioned, obviously, but I think those are a little different in that those were more like, I don't know, it's like Kobe and Shaq. Like, I know Kobe wasn't quite there yet, but even when he was second fiddle to Shaq, he was like still doing the same things he did when he was the first fiddle, you know, like, yeah. So I feel like it's even that's still a little, you can't quite make that comparison, but yeah, I mean, he obviously was, I think a big thing, especially with Rodman too, is that the way that Pippen and Rodman came up and the way that like they were, and they had to fight for everything, and they like sort of came from even less than Jordan as far as like basketball quote unquote pedigree or starting late or whatever. Like, I think you got like these hard workers, and it like, you know, enabled them to be that team, you know? So Pippen, obviously Jordan said it when he was like, you can't, if you speak Michael Jordan, you should speak Scottie Pippen. Like, that totally makes sense. And people now are hating on him, saying like, oh, he needed help or whatever. But like, it's a team sport. Like, everybody needs help.
Right.
Yeah, there's never been a one-man team in any major team sport on any facet that just has been able to dominate without having a good supporting cast. But I believe it was you, Chris, earlier that talked about how he still looks back at Pippen in that 89 series of not being able to get his migraine right in game 7, and then all of a sudden they lose. That to me seems a little bit extreme, though, right? Like, the fact that Michael Jordan, I think it's pretty evident if Scottie Pippen could have went out and played 100%, he would have done it. It was nothing more than a physical issue. I wonder why Michael Jordan still holds that against him.
I mean, I don't necessarily know if he holds it against him. I remember at the time he definitely held it against him. Today, I mean, I think they're pretty close today. I know that, you know, Scottie was the one that inducted MJ, and yeah, I don't know if he quote unquote still holds it against him, but at the time he definitely did.
Let's bring up another thing now, because this was something I actually kind of didn't know the backstory of, and I thought they would do a better job in the documentary about this, was the whole firing Doug Collins and replacing him with Phil Jackson deal, because it was a Jerry Krause thing. I know as much as Krause gets a bad rap, and seemingly after the first two episodes, it didn't look good for him. But he was the guy who wanted Phil Jackson and really went out of his way to make sure that Phil Jackson was part of this Bulls team and eventually the future coach. So I'll ask you this first, because I don't know if they would have. I would say they probably wouldn't have won six titles and been as successful if Doug Collins remains the coach. Chris, how many titles do the Bulls win if Doug Collins stays with that team and Phil Jackson goes elsewhere and is never with that organization going forward?
I would probably say two or three. I definitely think that Jordan alone is good enough to at least get one without a, you know, excellent head coach. You know, it's crazy because before this documentary, I was kind of always my argument towards Phil Jackson was always, yeah, he just has great talent. I don't think he's that great of a coach, but this really goes into his coaching style and how well of a talent, like how well he gets these pieces to play together and respect each other and work harder. Like, I have more respect for Phil Jackson coming out of this as a coach than I did before watching this, if that makes sense to you guys.
Well, how bad do you feel for Doug Collins though?
Bad, I guess, but Doug Collins was still a good coach, but I guess Krause was maybe right in the fact that he wasn't the right coach at the right time. But I find it hard to give Krause credit for anything, seeing as though he broke the team up in favor of, you know, Tim Floyd and Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry and Marcus Spicer and all those fucks. So, you know, it was funny earlier. You were talking about the Bulls before Jordan got there. It's like Jesus Christ, BJ and AJ before Jordan and after Jordan. The organization is a complete shit stain, BJ and AJ.
What do you think, Saul? I'm not sure you can really follow that, but just give me your opinions on the Phil Jackson, Doug Collins dynamic. I would say I'm kind of with Chris. I think he would have won three, but I'm not sure if he would have been there as long as Phil Jackson was ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I think he still would have pulled off a couple just because, you know, they did have greatness on their team. But I think the couple of big things that Phil had was obviously like handling people. Like, Collins couldn't have coached Rodman, that's for sure.
Correct.
That's 100% for sure. Like, they wouldn't have even gotten Rodman if Collins was still the coach. But I think the other thing is that I didn't really know the whole story was the influence of Tex Winter, yeah. Where he was there the whole time and he was pushing the triangle and doing all this, and Doug Collins' whole philosophy was just pass the ball to Jordan. And
you
like
get the ball to Michael and get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of coaching going on there, it seems like, where he was a good enough, you know, coach to get by, obviously, and like Jordan was good enough and Pippen was good and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, Phil definitely deserves a lot of credit, and he's a trip, man. I love it when they were talking about his like upbringing and like his whole storyline, and when they were showing him coaching in was it Puerto Rico, like
that was great.
Dope. I mean, that was awesome, and it's cool. It was cool to see like how successful he was like everywhere he went, like as a player, as a Puerto Rico team coach, as a not G League but whatever that sub-league was that he won the championship before he went to the Bulls. Like, I mean, the guy clearly knew what he was doing.
Right.
Who have you learned the most from so far in these four episodes? And let's remove Jordan, because at the end of the day, it's still mainly about him. But who else? Because I would say I learned a lot about Phil Jackson through these four episodes that I didn't know as much about. You know, I knew that certain aspects of him, he played for the Knicks and he was raised in Montana. I remember hearing that. But him coaching in Puerto Rico, as you said, him being an assistant coach that with the Tex Winter and the triangle, I didn't know any of that stuff. So I would say through four episodes, Salar, Phil's probably the guy I've learned the most about.
Yeah, definitely either Phil or Krause, honestly. Like, I didn't know much about Krause, and we still don't know like a ton about him. Like, we got some background on him, and he was sort of introduced as like, you know, the evil alien from Space Jam, that guy, the Danny DeVito guy. So like, but like, I didn't know a lot of that whole power struggle thing that was going on there. And this guy just like, man, he's a trip. So like learning about him, but yeah, Phil, I was with you, Kent, where like, you know, I knew, you know, he's from Montana. I knew he played for the Knicks and whatnot, but yeah, I didn't know all the other stuff. I knew he was the Zen master and stuff. I knew about the yoga and everything, but his whole philosophy was super interesting. And like I said, I really give him credit because, like, if it weren't for Phil Jackson, they never would have gotten Rodman. And if they never got Rodman, I don't know if they get a second three-peat. So that is all stemming from like Phil Jackson's ability to like deal with Rodman.
Yeah, I agree right. with that, Chris. Rodman and Phil, I mean, that was a huge deal to be able, because there weren't many teams knocking at the door for Dennis Rodman at that point. He quit on the Spurs. He was a guy during a playoff series that took off his shoes. And, you know, at that point, it's unsalvageable. You can't bring the guy back. And yet Phil Jackson, we learned, and this is something I never knew. Maybe it was common knowledge. I don't think it was. This whole, Chris, this 48-hour vacation.
Yeah, 48 hours in Vegas.
Well, it ended up being longer than that, but how right. crazy is that to think about a coach let that guy go, yep, this is what you need. It's not going to crush us right now. If not, things might fall apart, and he lets Dennis Rodman go to Vegas for seemingly what is at minimum 48 hours of stuff that, you know, nowadays with cell phone cameras and TMZ and social media, like, this would blow up in a team's face in a second.
I mean, do you guys remember what Carmen Electra looked like back then? If Dennis Rodman came to me and I was a coach and said, yo, I can get away with this chick for 48 hours, I would be like, go now, run.
What do you mean then? What about what she looks like now? She looks the same.
She looks still great up, now, yeah, too, dude. She looks great now. I was texting that to Newman last night. I'm like, she looks great. And he was being all Newman about it. He's like, yeah, I don't know. She looks all right. And I'm like, you are high, bro. You are higher than high. But yeah, no, it definitely speaks to Phil as a coach and how, you know, he really, really, really understood his players. He got what his players needed and wanted and, you know, was able to put it together. As far as the question you asked earlier about which personality have I learned the most about so far through four games, I mean, I live, breathe, die, worship Jordan my entire life growing up, even after he retired. So I've known just about the majority of all the stuff about him. I didn't really know anything about Scottie Pippen's upbringing, his collegiate career, his life, anything about that. I didn't know his contract situation. So I thought it was really cool to kind of learn a whole bunch about Scottie Pippen that I didn't really know about. You know, I think I've told you guys this story before, but like around here in Chicago, Scottie Pippen is known as No Tippin' Pippen. back in the 90s, you know, he was an asshole. This is just like what people recall. He was an asshole. He would go out to dinner and would tip horrible. And then I don't know if I've told you, I'm pretty sure I've told you guys this story before, but when one of my buddies, Brent, ran into Scottie Pippen outside of a Bulls game and went up to him and asked him for his autograph. And Scottie Pippen told Brent to fuck off when he was like 11 years old.
This is when Pippen was still on the team. This isn't post yes. his career.
No, oh this is God. When he was still on the team. He told an 11-year-old kid to fuck off.
I mean, that would happen to Brent.
100%. 100%. But like an athlete tells an 11-year-old kid to fuck off. You know, these are the things that I knew about Scottie Pippen. I didn't know any of his backstory. You know, the no tip and Pippen thing, like, fine, maybe he didn't tip because he got shafted so bad in his contract and he wanted to make sure that he had money when he was done playing, you know. So I thought it was kind of cool to learn about him. Learned a little bit about Jerry Krause. You know, I always around here, you knew that Jerry Krause always said organizations win championships, not players. So that was kind of always held against him. I didn't know how intensely hated he was at the time. Right. You know, Jordan making fun of him, calling him fat, everybody picking on him. It's pretty comical. Him saying that Phil Jackson could win 82 games and they still wouldn't bring him back for another year. I mean, this guy is just – I hated him before and I hate him even more now.
Yeah, do we know, by the way, what happened – that he went from he was a Phil Jackson guy with Tex Winter and he wanted him to be the guy to then less than 7 years or I guess 10 years later, all of a sudden he wants Phil out. Like I didn't quite – I don't think they even told specifically what happened that transpired, like, or unless I missed it.
No, they didn't really specifically tell exactly what transpired. They just kind of said, you know, it was fat man jealousy syndrome that he wanted the credit and he wasn't getting any credit. So he wanted to blow it up so he could prove that he could do it again. And he failed miserably. Yeah.
He wanted Tim Floyd to then be part of the quote unquote, the same organization.
Exactly.
But what do you think, Salar? What do you think? Because we see the stuff about Rodman and Phil Jackson allowing him to go to Vegas. Jordan with his stuff, you know, off the court with, you know, the gambling, which they're going to get into later on the documentary. So we're not going to really touch upon that now. But just through those first few years, with the physicalness of the league, with everything that's transpired, what would be the hardest thing right now that those Bulls couldn't do now that they did then?
That's tough, because like I think that's like one of those teams that could do what they did. Like, yeah, they played physical like everybody did. Rodman would get fined a lot more money and thrown out of a lot more games, but like,
yeah, that's for sure.
But I mean, other than that, I mean, the skill set that he brought, I don't think that is only generational. Like, you could still use a guy like that. Like, anybody could. Like, you know, it's, people compared, you know, Draymond Green to a really poor man's version of him, but like, it's the same type of idea where like everything that they did, you could still do now, and you still need to do it. Funny side note of Dennis Rodman too. I saw after that, the episode last night and the story about Vegas, Donovan Mitchell actually tweeted out something like, guys, real Dennis Rodman invented load management, like LOL or something. And I think it's like, oh my God,
I saw that tweet too. I've been actually, that's pretty cool. Like, following today's players' reactions to this documentary, I try to look into that as much as I can. I think it's pretty cool.
Oh, they love it, because like, yeah, they're all, you know, they're all younger than us for the most
right.
part.
Right, they all of them, the extent of their Jordan viewing history is YouTube highlights.
Yeah,
you know, that's their extent. You know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, I mean, they're our age. They're, you know, they watch Jordan play, but like all the young bucks, none of them did.
Yeah, exactly right. Like they were on Jordan through YouTube, through NBA TV, through social media, and that they've been able to see him. This episode with him, and I know you were excited last week, Chris, about the fact that episodes 3 and 4 were going to be Pistons heavy.
And yeah,
the Pistons were the team that went in between the Celtics and the Bulls. You had Bird and Mikal and those Celtics teams, a lot of battles with the Lakers. Then the Pistons took over. They battled the Lakers. They eventually win 2 in a row, and they're going for their own three-peat. And then there's the Chicago Bulls. How about Jordan wearing the three-peat shirt on the airplane, getting out, just sort of poking fun at that team and insulting them, being like, nope, you guys aren't going to three-peat. We're going to beat you. But I guess the biggest incident was this whole you're not shaking their hands and you walk away, and they said the Celtics did it before them, so the Pistons did it. That seems like kind of a weird thing for the guys to be that mad about, right?
Jordan just really, they were such a heated rivalry back in the day. I remember this rivalry. And Jordan just really, really, really hated them for the way that, you know, they dogged him that. Because, I mean, he touched it on the documentary. The two previous years, you know, each time they were eliminated, he went up, shook everybody's hand, thanked them, you know, gave them hugs. And they lose like that. They get swept and they're just babies. And then you guys remember the Dream Team in 92, like, Jordan actively campaigned and lobbied to keep Isaiah Thomas off that team. And Isaiah Thomas was clearly deserving to be on the Dream Team. You know, I mean, when you have people like Christian Laettner on the Dream Team and not Isaiah Thomas, like, yeah, the hatred between Jordan and Isaiah Thomas is very, very real. And you can even see it to this day from Isaiah Thomas, too, because whenever he's on ESPN, right, I didn't get to see it today, but in the last 10 to 15 years, whenever he's on ESPN, he always says that Michael Jordan is not the greatest basketball player that ever lived. Like, he's always been the guy that's like, no, screw him. Like, they would fight each other, and Jordan would whoop his ass, but they would fight each other if they could.
What about Jordan, Saul? What about him watching Isaiah Thomas and seeing his comment? I thought that was a really good touch on this documentary. And later, again, I've been fortunate enough, I've been able to see the first 8 episodes. There's several times where they do this, where Jordan watches somebody, their interview clip, and then he comments on it, and him just basically, not even like before they play the Isaiah Thomas clip, he's just going, I don't care what the guy says, he's still an asshole. And just that seed is just there, and you can tell, man, those guys just don't like each other. But I guess my other question would be, Salar, is Isaiah Thomas one of the most underrated players of all time? Because you can make a legit argument he's a second or third best point guard. Pretty much Magic, And then it's, you know, Stockton, it's a Thomas, it's Bob Cousy, those type of guys. I think a Thomas was, by all accounts, one of the best players in that era and, you know, probably a top 20 player or top 25 player of his entire career.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that whole Pistons team was like they were pretty stacked between him and Joe Dumars and having that young Rodman on there and then, you know, the big tough guys or whatever that sort of backed them up. And they were a great team. But, I mean, the thing that really got me about Jordan's reaction was like, yeah, like you said, like the second that they like mentioned his name, his eyes started rolling and he was just like, oh, God, this clown again. Like you, the hate is still strong. And like I knew about the whole walking off early thing, but I'd kind of forgotten about it. So when they showed it again, I was like, oh, yeah. And they talked about the Celtics thing. And I read later that the Celtics were like, that was when the Celtics did that to Detroit. They were in Detroit and the crowd was a mob and they were like afraid. So that's why they like ran out or something, right. Which I don't know how much truth there is to this, but like, that's what they said. Whereas the Pistons didn't have to, or didn't feel, you know, push into it. They just didn't want to talk to them or whatever. I got to give a shout out to John Sally though, because I saw a thing that he actually did shake hands after that game. But no,
he was setting himself up so he could join the team in '98.
Yeah, right. But yeah, no, I mean, is John Sally, rivalry.
Somebody brought up a point. John Sally may be one of the best. I guess you'd have to throw Robert Horry in this mix too. But a guy that absolutely found a way on some of the best franchises of all time. The Bad Boys, Pistons, the Bulls, to and get their the entry beat, and then Shaq and Kobe with the Lakers as well.
Yep. Yeah, crazy, yeah, that man. Dude, except he wasn't nearly as influential towards the outcome as Robert Horry was.
Correct.
You know, John Sally, he was a decent role player for the Pistons, but for the Bulls and the Lakers, like, he probably saw like 23 minutes of action the entire season.
they were giving Isaiah shit on ESPN. I saw something that like Stephen A was like, you're seriously sitting here like talking up John Sally and stuff, and it's like, no, like.
Well, before we wrap this one, I'm gonna ask you guys two more questions here to end it, and you can combine them. One is, what have you liked so far the most through the four episodes? What have you disliked the most through four episodes? And then ultimately, what are you most looking forward to as we have six more episodes to go? I'll start with you, Sala.
I mean, I'm obviously most looking forward to like the pinnacle, the last final series and everything. Cause like,
the shot.
And the shot and like everything, like, cause like, I remember that. I remember watching that. And like, I just think that's going to be fun. And that was also like the peak of the Jazz organization, which I like am okay with, but like, it's like, oh, it's going to be fun to sort of watch that back. I do also really want to see if they have any Carmelo and Dennis Rodman sections, because those guys were not friends. But I haven't disliked anything. Like, I've freaking loved it all. I feel like it's been really well made. I love how they kind of are jumping back and forth in time. I've read that some people aren't super into that, but I kind of love it, going back and forth and getting all the backstory and stuff, all the childhood stories and Rodman's life. Like, everything has just been awesome.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I agree with Saul 100%. I already had my answer planned out that I was going to say. I did like nothing. I like every single second of this. Every night that it ends, you know, the last two Sundays that it ends, I just sit there and I'm like, dude, I need more. Like, it's like freaking crack or some shit, you know? I literally have loved every single second of it, from the intro to the end of each episode. I think that, you know, the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is obviously, you know, what Saul kind of got into, is the journey from the start going all the way up until 1998 and hitting the shot against, you know, the Jazz in their last dance, the Bulls' last dance. But we talked about memories earlier, and my first memory of the Bulls, which was against the Lakers, and really Jordan switching hands in midair. Like, that's just really my first vivid memory, was the switch. But the thing that I'm looking forward to most was my most enjoyable memory I guess when I was a kid, I remember exactly where I was. I was in second grade. I was in my old home in Naperville, the one that I grew up with, grew up inside, and we were watching the Bulls versus the Trailblazers series, the finals, and the shrug when Jordan was just going off, hitting three after three after three, and I just really vividly remember watching that, just like going absolutely bananas, you know, as this like 9-year-old kid. And I, like, 2 weeks later, I signed up and went away to basketball camp because it just had such a massive influence on me. Like, yeah, that the shrug was just incredible, and I can't wait for it to get there.
Yeah, it's been awesome so far. I would say that there's definitely going to be so much more to go. And this is, at the end of the day, Michael Jordan, one of the most compelling people in all sports. And we talked about it, not just because of how good he was, but because of his determination and just the fact that you have guys, and this is why Kobe was a guy, especially out here in L.A., that so many Lakers fans love, is the guy just did everything he could and maximized whatever talent he had to be able to win. And Michael Jordan had the talent. Roy Williams discusses this early in, I think it was episode 1 or 2, saying, you know, by the time they recruited him in high school, it was pretty evident that this guy was the best high school player they've ever seen. And yet when he got to North Carolina, he had to earn his position. He had to really work his way towards becoming a star. You know, James Worthy's on that team. Sam Perkins is on that team. He didn't just enter a team where it was some little, you know, mom and pop college that he became the star at 18. He was, as James Worthy said, after a couple of weeks, he was better than me, but they didn't let that known at the time. So I like it. I'm learning a lot. I'm looking forward to just seeing, you know, all of this entire history and the story between the Bulls. And they were, you know, for the 90s, they were the team of the 90s in any sport in the United States. I know the Cowboys won a couple. The Penguins won a couple. The Red Wings started becoming relevant in the NHL. Whenever you look at, you know, other sports, there were teams, but there was no dynasty like the 1990s Bulls. And frankly, we'll probably never see that type of team and that type of dominance going forward. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll continue to do these, and maybe, knock on wood, we'll have some news on the NBA season, and maybe they'll start doing a playoff. There's these rumors about Las Vegas and all the guys getting together in Vegas. Maybe Rodman can join them and hang out with Carmen Electra for all we know. But hopefully we still have a season to be had, and there's a playoffs or an expedited version of something, because let's be real, there's not a lot of sports happening. We have UFC on the horizon. We have some other stuff, golf starting back up in about a month, but basketball, hockey, this should be the time, guys, where we're doing these recap shows, and on a Monday night you have, you know, NBA playoffs. I have Stanley Cup playoffs on another TV, and then we're coming and talking about, oh man, I can't believe that upset happened, and we're looking forward to game 5 and round 1. And instead, this has been great, but it's still not live sports, but it's giving us something. So signing off from LA, Sacktown, and the Windy City, this has been the Triple Threat Basketball Podcast.